All right, we're beginning here on the top of Tet Vavam and Aleph, two lines down. Just to review, yesterday we saw in the Mishnah that a person who takes a neder, and here he's taking a neder with regards to intangible items, which generally, with regards to a neder, would not take effect. So the Gemara has to deal with that issue as to what exactly is going on in the Mishnah when he's taking a neder vis-a-vis these intangible items. We started yesterday with a machloket that's independent of our Mishnah, but obviously it's going to parlay into the Mishnah, which is a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda Marav and Rav Nachman, where a person premises a neder or conditions a neder based on an action that he takes. And it can happen in one of two ways. He can either say, if something happens on Monday, then I'll be chayav in a neder on Tuesday. Or he can take a neder with regards to Monday if he does something on Tuesday. So everybody agrees in the instance where he takes the neder and says, if such and such happens on Monday, then the neder will take effect on Tuesday, that he's allowed to trigger the neder. Then on Monday, we allow him to trigger the neder, and then he'll deal with the neder that he took on Tuesday. The question comes up in a situation in which the neder is effective for Monday, and the condition or the trigger is after the neder is already passed on Tuesday. There we have a machlok between Rav Yehuda Marav and Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, okay, let him violate the neder on Monday, and then he'll just have to be careful not to trigger it on Tuesday. Just the same situation, just in reverse. Rav Yehuda Marav says it's different. When it comes to the case where the trigger is on Monday and the neder is on Tuesday, people are careful about their nidarim. So if he triggers the neder on Monday, we're fine, he'll take care of it on Tuesday. The problem in the other scenario is if on Monday the neder takes effect, and Tuesday is when the trigger is, if we allow him to violate the neder on Monday, assuming that he'll take care and not violate the trigger on Tuesday, people are not so careful about their tanaim. People aren't so careful about their conditions. When it comes to the neder, they'll take care. Conditions are not so careful. Machloket, Rav Yehuda Marav, and Rav Nachman. Now our Gemara asks from our Mishnah. Tnan, konam shani yashen, shani mehalich, shani medaber. Takes a neder, that he will not sleep, he will not walk somewhere, he will not speak. Heichi domi. What's the case in our Mishnah? Ilei makadiktani. If you take it literally, shani yashen, mehava nidra. Since when would that be a neder? Vatnan. Whether this is a Mishnah or Vatanya, that's a Tosefta, Chomer b'shavua. The things that are more stringent by Shavuot are Shavuot Chalot or Davar Sheyesh Bo Mamash, Val Davar Sheyesh Bo Mamash. When it comes to a Shavuah, Shavuah is able to take effect both on tangible items and intangible items. Mashen Kein B'Nidarim, which is not true when it comes to Nidarim. With regards to Shavuot, Shavuah is an Iser from the Gavra, has to do with your relationship with an object, your relationship with a situation. Therefore, it can relate to both tangible and intangible items. So a person can speak about, and we'll see in the next Mishnah, Shavuah, Sheini Yashen. He can take a Shavuah that he will not sleep. That's fine, because the Shavuah is about your relationship with the sleep, and that is permissible. When it comes to a Shavuah, that's possible to accomplish. By a neder, if we're talking about the chetzah, if we're talking about the object, and the neder restricts the object, what object is there when you're talking about an intangible item? And therefore, Mashen came in the Darim. Our Mishnah is full of intangible objects. Sleeping, walking, talking, these are all intangible objects. On what does the nether take effect? V'sheina, davar shein bo mamashu. When it comes to sleep, sleep is clearly an intangible item. El damar, konam einai v'sheina. So David's suggestion, didn't we already say here that you can take nidarim with regards to these intangible objects or these relationship objects where you specify the physical object that creates it. So over here, it's the eyes that will close to sleep. Therefore, what you can say is that I take the nether that my eyes will not close for sleep. Something to that effect where you've now attached it to a tangible object rather than an intangible object, and that should solve your problem. Mar says, V'idalo ya'iv shiura mishav ginanay ad'avad isur bayachel. Wait a minute, this is Fred's question. If you just say that I'm taking a neder, that I'm not going to sleep, is that really possible? There is no plausible way that a person can take a neder that he will not sleep without any defined time associated with it. Rama Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, this is brought in the Gemara in Sukkah with regards to Simchat Beit HaShoeva, where they give the schedule and it says they didn't sleep at all during the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. And there the Gemara says, how is that possible? Didn't Rabbi Yochanan say Shvua Shlo Yishan Shlosha Yamim? Person takes a Shvua that he would not sleep for 3 days. Malkin Oto, give him Malkot, Yashen the altar, and he should sleep right away. That's the way most Rishonim read it. There are some Rishonim read it. Said Shvua Shlo Yishan Shlosha Yamim, Malkin Oto, Yashen. We give him Malkot, and he will go Yashen and the altar. He will get Malkot. The altar is modifying the Malkot. He gets Malkot right away. And whenever he is mitunas, then he will fall asleep. The question being whether you're allowed to sleep right away because it's a shvuat shav, or do you get malkot? Then you only can fall asleep once you are anus. Once you are under duress and you can't stay up anymore, then you fall asleep. Most Rishonim believe you can sleep right away because the shvuat shav, it never takes effect. Some Rishonim, I think the Ritva suggests that the altar is modifying the malkot, but you have to wait to fall asleep until you are anus to fall asleep. So now, what we have here is a problem, meaning that if you explain the Mishnah in a way that makes it that it could be a neder, which is that it's attached to some physical part of the body, then the neder won't work because simply the neder is a neder without any limits to it. And a neder without limits, or even a shvua without limits with regards to sleep, will not take effect. Now here, the Gemara is clear by shvua, and we know that this is the case, that if a person takes a shvua shav, chayav malkot. So in this case, where the person says, Shvua, Shlo Yishan, Shlosha Yamim, he gets Malkot, because he took a Shvuat Shav. So number one, he gets Malkot for Shvuat Shav. Number two is, even though it's a Lav She'in Bo Maaseh, Shvua has a special dispensation, which is, even though there's no Maaseh, you still get Malkot. So those are the two things that are associated with Shvua. How does that get brought over to Neder? What's the status for a Neder in this same situation? So over here, where the person takes a neder that he will not sleep, gives no time limit to it, it's clear that the neder is a neder shav. What is the status of a neder shav? So the Ran over here says that all of this is just connection to some other paradigm in Shvua, but it's not true by neder at all. And what he says is, Klomar, what the Gemara is really saying is, Ki b'chi hai gavna michayel nidra klau? In such a situation, does the nether take effect at all? Since it's impossible to take the nether because you can't keep it in the end, it's as if you never took the nether. The nether never takes effect. The nether shav lo ashkechan de asur. He says that we never find a case where a nether shav is considered to be asur. Mishum shvua nakad hai lishna. And the only reason that the Gemara brought it down in this format is because it's paralleling it with shvua. That means by a shvua shav, first of all, the shvua, according to most, will not take effect. You will get malkot, and you'll be deemed to have taken a shvua shav. Which means that the shvua takes effect long enough for you to get your malkot, or the fact that you made a shvua shav makes it that you'll get the malkot. But what the Ran says is there's no such thing as a neder shav. We don't have any restriction against neder shav. That's because the restriction to violate a neder is bal yachel divaro. That one may not profane his word. Profaning your word is when you've given your word. And then bal yachel divaro means now you violate that word. An action that later on will ruin or affect the neder, that type of action is what causes you to violate bal yachel divaro. Number two is that violation will also be, in most cases, an active violation of bal yachel. And that's how you end up with malkot. On the other hand, over here, what the Ran suggests is, the neder never takes effect. The neder never takes effect, and therefore, if the neder is impossible, it never takes effect, then you can't be in violation of the neder, you won't get malkot. So there, the Ran has two premises over here. One premise is that the neder shav does not take effect whatsoever, number one. Number two is, the Ran believes that when you violate a neder, the violation is when you take the action to violate the neder. When you violate bal yachel divaro, it's not retroactively that you violated your word, but rather when you take that action, that is the violation of the word. We saw something similar in the Ran earlier on. The Ran says that the Hava Mina might have been that it was good to take a neder, even though you couldn't fulfill it. I mean, you take a neder and you're not going to bring the korban in the end. Maybe there was some positive aspect to this, some meritorious side to taking a neder, even though you don't keep it, with regards to promising to bring a korban. The Ran says that's not the case, because the accomplishment of the neder is all in the maaseh. When you do the action, that's when you're mekayim the neder. So similarly over here, the Ran is very focused on the maaseh, the action that either violates the neder, or the action that keeps the neder. That's what the focus is on, not on the neder itself. And the violation of Baal Yechel comes at that moment, or the kiyum of Baal Yechel comes at that moment, or the kiyum of the neder comes at that moment when the action is taken. So based on that, the Ran says, there's going to be no action over here, because the neder never gets off the ground. Since the neder never gets off the ground, there's no such thing as a neder shav, because the Ran believes all the violation is done at the time of the action. No malkot. And seemingly, according to the way the Ran, if you read his words, aren't the neder shav, lo ashkechan dasur. He doesn't even think it's a sur. You can see here the Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, quotes you, or Christ references you to a Tosafot in Gitin, on Daf Lamed Hey. But Tosafot seems to indicate that there is such thing, or a concept called Neder Shav. So now, the Tosafot can disagree with the Ran on two levels. You can disagree on the Ran on the level that a Neder Shav, where you're taking a Neder that's impossible to keep, is never takes effect. So you could argue on that point and say that a Neder, such a Neder does take effect, and therefore, when you do sleep, you're in violation of the neder, and therefore you'll get malkot. Or, he can argue on the other premise of the Ran, which is that the violation of a neder, Baal Yechel Devaro, is associated with the action when you take the action to violate the neder. The Tosafot can believe that the violation is not keeping your word. And when you don't keep your word, then you get malkot. So Tosafot over there could believe that Baal Yechel Devaro is a focus on what you said, and profaning what you said. Not necessarily by action, but period. If you make a statement, you make a neder that has no effect, or will not take effect, or will not be able to take effect because of the nature of the neder, that might be Baal Yechel Devaro right away. Meaning that it's not focused on your action, but rather focused on Baal Yechel Devaro, that the violation of your word is what is so important. And we see such a distinction in the Rishonim as to when one violates a neder. Are they violating the neder because the action they're taking is asur, or they're engaging with something that's asur, or is it because of the word that they gave before, and retroactively they are profaning the word? The Baal Yechel is really a violation of the neder itself, rather than the action that causes a violation of the neder. The Baal Yechel Devaro is that you didn't keep your word. And for that reason, Tosafot could believe that the Baal Yechel Devaro is the focus, and therefore even when you take a neder shav, you don't need an action to violate it. The mere fact that you took a neder shav already causes a violation, and therefore that violation deems you chayav in that case. Now you'll have to deal with the issue of why in that instance you do get malkot, or whether you should get malkot in that case, because it may be a lav she'im b'maseh, and that'll be a separate issue that you have to deal with within the shita of Tosafot. But it's clear here that the Tosafot disagrees with this position of the Ran. There are suggestions to bring them closer together, that the Ran here really only means that there's no Malkot, although the Ran says that Lo Ashkechan Da'asur makes it sound like it's not just not Malkot, it's not Asur at all. And therefore, we could close the gap between the Ran and the Tosafot, but on the surface, and it's clear that Rabbi Akiva Eiger views these as being differentiated opinions arguing on each other, the Ran here and the Tosafot in Gitin. So now we have to move on to our next solution, which is, what is the case in our Mishnah? Ella, damar konam einai b'shena lemachar im ishan hayom. He says that our Mishnah must be talking about a case where he says that my eyes will not see any sleep tomorrow im ishan hayom, if I sleep today. So now here you have the trigger today, and the neder comes into effect tomorrow. Haramart kol b'isurei mizdaher. You said before that everybody is careful when it comes to their isur. So the way the Ran explains this is that even though that is a plausible explanation of our Mishnah, nevertheless, that it's just not a chiddush. There's nothing in there that tells you any information that is you wouldn't have known otherwise. Which is, if you say that if I sleep today, then I may not sleep tomorrow, and then you go ahead, sleep today, and then you sleep tomorrow, then you're in violation of Baal Yechel. There's nothing there that the Mishnah is teaching you, and there's no chiddush there that the Mishnah is teaching you, especially if it could have taught you other information, which is that there is a case where there's a machloket between Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda. This is a case where there is no machloket between them. And why would the Mishnah bring down a case where everyone agrees to that outcome and give you information that you could have figured out on your own? Which is, if you take a neder that triggers, based on a trigger today, that will cause the neder to go into effect tomorrow, then if you trigger it today, if you violate it tomorrow, you're in violation of Bayechel. It's not even a question. Do we let you sleep today? Yes, because we assume you will not violate it tomorrow. Either of those scenarios are agreed upon by everybody, and therefore there's no chiddush. Elapshita, it must be that our Mishnah is talking about a controversial case, which is the case of the Amar Kunam Einai B'Sheina Hayom. He takes the neder for today. I will not sleep today. Imishan L'Machar, if I sleep tomorrow. So in that case, now we have a problem, because now our Mishnah is taking sides in the Machlok between Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda Marav. Because here the Mishnah is saying that if you say, I take a neder that today I will not sleep, if I sleep tomorrow, are you allowed to sleep today? The answer is, yes, you are allowed to sleep today, and we assume you will not trigger it tomorrow. Because if you trigger it tomorrow, you will be in violation of Baal Yachel, which is what the Mishnah says, Harizeb Baal Yachel Divaro. According to Rabbi Yehuda said that you're not allowed to sleep today because you might violate or you might trigger the neder tomorrow. Well, if you don't sleep today, then guess what? There's no way you can be in violation of Baal Yachel Divaro because you didn't sleep today. So then tomorrow, if you trigger the neder, you're not going to have a problem because you didn't sleep today. So clearly, that's against the position of Rabbi Yehuda. V'idlo na'im ayom. So if you don't sleep today, ki na'im l'machar, my Baal Yachel Divaro ika. If, according like Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not allowed to sleep today because we're afraid you will trigger the neder tomorrow, then what type of Baal Yechel is there? If you trigger it tomorrow, based on Rabbi Yehuda's shita, there is no Baal Yechel because you didn't sleep today. Elav bidna naim. It must be a case where you slept today, even though your neder says not to, because we assume that you will not trigger the neder tomorrow. Alma ite denaim, and therefore we see you're allowed to take a nap or sleep on that day, assuming that you won't trigger it tomorrow. V'tiyufta de Rabbi Yehuda. And that is a strong refutation of the position of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda would not allow you to sleep today. So the Gemara answers, ki ketoni de'inayim. Wait a minute. Rabbi Yehuda tells you the chatchila stance. The chatchila stance is don't sleep on Monday, because you might cause on Tuesday for the neder to be triggered retroactively. So he says, I'll make you a suggestion. Don't sleep on Monday so you don't violate the neder. And then when you trigger it on Tuesday, you won't have a problem because people aren't so careful about their conditions or their triggers. But that's only in a case where you listen to us. What happens if the guy did sleep on Monday? So he didn't listen. Bidi avad, if he did sleep on Monday, then if he triggers the neder on Tuesday, yes, you will be in violation of the neder. So now that already is somewhat of a chiddush for Rabbi Yehuda. It's not a perfect chiddush, which is that lechatchila you shouldn't sleep on that Monday because that's when the neder is going to be effective. So don't sleep on that Monday. But if you did sleep on that Monday, he says, then we expect you not to trigger the neder the next day because we don't want you to be in violation of Bayechel Divaro. But now we have a chiddush, which is that the Mishnah is only talking about a case of bidyavad. That means that the Mishnah is also teaching lechatchila you shouldn't sleep on Monday. And now there's a chiddush in the Mishnah, and that's how he'll answer. Gemara says, Viravina offers an alternative answer on his behalf. Ravina, Marlo Olam Kediktani. So over here, it's like it's written. Exactly like the Mishnah says here. Neder, in an intangible item, no emendations, no changes of the Mishnah at all. Umay Baal Yechel. So then, what do you mean Baal Yechel Devaro? When you take a neder about an intangible item, that's not a neder. That's Midrabanan. It's Baal Yechel Midrabanan. There's an Isur Derabanan associated with our Mishnah. Which means that when you take a neder about an intangible object, even though the neder is not chal midoraita, midrabanan, it takes effect. Gemara asks, mi'ika ba yachel midrabanan? Is there such a concept of violating one's neder, profaning one's word only on a rabbinic level? In, yes, va'atanya, we have a braita, must be minichuta, right? This is a braita that supports this position. Dvarim amutarim, v'acherim nohagu behen isur, found in the beginning of the fourth parak. In Arvei Psach, in Psachim, there, Makom Shenagu, talks about a place that has a minhag to make something asur. You're not allowed to come in there and all of a sudden make it into heter or act as if the minhag doesn't exist. Even though there are different practices and different minhagim, If that place or that location keeps the minhag to be oser, you can't come in and flaunt the fact that you do not have that minhag, or that it's heter for you. You must abide by the rules of the location. When the minhag was dependent on the location, there are very few things that are based on location anymore. Most minhagim are based on where a person's originations are, or where his family is from. Back then, all the minhagim were based on location, not based on the individual. That changed as we got moved around a lot more. People took their minhagim with them, and then they went to new locations. So, a good example today where there's still location-based mitzvah would have to do with, for instance, not putting on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. There are different minhagim with regards to putting on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. In Eretz Yisrael, which follows the minhag Gra, the Gra believes that you do not put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Then to put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed would be a violation of Lo Tidgodudu, because in Eretz Yisrael, everybody based on the location does not put on tefillin, even if your minhag was to do so. So therefore, to put on tefillin in shul in Eretz Yisrael would be a problem of Lo Tidgodudu. In Chutz Laaretz, there are mixed minhagim, and therefore they try to keep the minyanim consistent, but nevertheless, many times you'll find in the same minyan people putting on tefillin, not putting on tefillin, and there's no structured minhag. So over here, you're not allowed to go ahead and make it mutar in front of them. Lo yachel divaro. So here they quote a pasuk from the Torah. It's clearly not an isur d'oraita. We're talking about minagim over here. So it's only an isur d'rabanan, and yet they're quoting lo yachel divaro. So you see from this that there is a concept called lo yachel divaro mi d'rabanan. So same thing over here with regards to our Mishnah. Lo yachel divaro is also only in Isur Drabanan. So what Ravina suggests over here is that the Mishnah is exactly as written. The surprising aspect of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah says in Harizeb Val Yachel Dvaro, that when you do this and you violate this neder, then you are, or either when you take this neder or you violate this neder, you're in violation of profaning one's word. And he quotes a pasuk from the Torah. So you would have assumed that that means Deoraita. That's why the Gemara challenged Ravina and says, whoever find Bayachel Devaro Dirabanan. Not that we don't find Isurim Dirabanan. Not that we don't find Siagim Dirabanan. But that you quote the Isur Dirabanan based on the Pasuk in the Torah, that seems strange. But then the Gemara says, we have other instances of that. I brought you from Makom Shenagu in Psachim, a similar concept, which is that you have the Gemara saying that if you violate the minhag of the Makom, that you're in violation of Bayachel Devaro. And they quote a Pasuk in the Torah. I'd say that's profaning one's word, what would look like an Isur d'oraita. Nevertheless, it's only talking about an Isur d'rabanan. So we see other examples of that idea that Bal Yechel Devaro can be used as an Isur d'rabanan. What's interesting over here is that the Gemara is clearly making an Isur d'rabanan over here because we don't want people playing around with Nidarim. We don't want people taking either Nidarim willy-nilly. We don't want people taking Nidarim even though they don't take effect because of an intangible item over here. But we don't know if people are always going to understand why the neder didn't take effect. And therefore, they might take the neder next time on a tangible item and think, oh, I can get rid of that neder as well. And they won't understand the difference. Therefore, the Rabbanan imposed an Isur over here, which says that rabbinically it is a sur, and you're going to have to get a tarat neder. You're going to have to go to Shelat Chacham in order to release the neder. Before, we saw the same thing in the previous Mishnah with regards to Ishto. And over there, the Rambam expanded even beyond that type of neder by Yishto, but to all the nedarim that were mentioned in the Mishnah. And the Gemara brought a differentiation between a Talmud Chacham and an Am Haaretz. The Gemara there says that only an Am Haaretz needs Hatarat Nedarim. A Talmud Chacham does not need Hatarat Nedarim. And we explain the reason being either because the Talmud Chacham doesn't take Nedarim a lot, or because the Amaretz won't understand the reason why we're being matir the neder here without any hatara, or without any petach, and therefore he might then think lightly of nidarim, and in the future he'll take nidarim that need hatarat chacham, and he won't get hatarat chacham. So that's what we said previously. Yet the Rambam, in our Mishnah, paskins, that when it comes to the Mishnah here, it's equally applicable to a Talmud Chacham and an Amaretz. He does not differentiate between the Talmud Chacham and Amaretz versus the previous Mishnah where he did differentiate between a Talmud Chacham and an Am Haaretz. Although there are those that argue on the Rambam who believe that it only has impact on Am Haaretz, similar to the previous Mishnah. So, in the Rishimot Shiurim of Soloveitchik brings a chiluk that there's a difference in the nature of the nedarim over here. The neder, like when you say kibasar chazir, or you say kinevela, and you put the neder into effect, the neder never takes effect. It's a zero because you use something that doesn't have davar nadur, but rather something davar asur. There's no hadpasa. The neder can't even get off the ground. It's not even a neder. Therefore, since it's not even a neder, over there we differentiate between the Talmud Chacham and the Amaretz. Whereas in our case, over here, when you say konam shani yashin, so he says that I'm taking a neder that I will not go to sleep. Here you use konam, which is a proper mechanism for doing it, which is using hadpasa with a korban. The problem is that he engaged an intangible item. So when he engaged an intangible item, it's not that this type of neder, this type of structure of neder won't take effect. It's a technicality within nidarim that an intangible item can't create the chepza shel isur. So since it's a technical problem, this type of neder has, we'll call it, more effectiveness, and therefore there's more reason to believe that you would require a tarat chacham over here than the other case. So therefore, by the case of davar shein bo mamash, intangible items, the neder takes effect midrabanan. Since it takes effect midrabanan, it has equal application to the amaretz in the Talmud Chacham. The other hand, in the case of kibasar, chazir, and so on and so forth, the neder doesn't even take effect midrabanan. There's a special requirement that the amaretz goes to the chacham, it's a knas, in order for him to get the neder to be mutar, or to do shelat chacham. It's not because the neder took effect, it's simply because we are penalizing him in order to encourage or engender a certain behavior by the amaretz. And therefore the din can be unique to an amaretz versus a Talmud Chacham. And obviously the same would be true with regards to a noder ba'torah, similar to the case of kibasar chazir. And based on that, they want to differentiate in the Rambam Sfak why in the previous case they differentiated between Talmud Chacham and amaretz. Because in that case, the neder never got off the ground. It wasn't a neder. Since it wasn't a neder, we're only imposing on the amaretz because of whatever reasons, whether it's because we don't want him taking these nederim a lot, or because we want him coming to the chacham every time. So there we'll exempt the Talmud Chacham from getting a threatened neder. Over here, where the neder really looks like a neder, it has all the trappings of a neder, it's set up properly, it's executed properly, there's a technicality that it's an intangible item, so it won't work. In that case, we would say that everybody needs to get a Torat Chacham, even the Talmud Chacham, because there is what we call quasi-neder over here, and that quasi-neder is going to require everyone to get a Torat Chacham, versus the case before where it wasn't even a neder, and therefore we'll exempt the Talmud Chacham from getting a Torat Chacham. For that reason, they differentiate between our Mishnah and the Mishnah, the previous Mishnah, as to why there's no distinction in our Mishnah between an Amaretz and a Talmud Chacham. Right, Tanan, we're into another Mishnah later on in the Masechta, where a case where it says, She'at ne'nelit li'ad Pesach, you were not allowed to get any benefit from me until Pesach, im telchid beit avich ad achag. If you go to your father's house until the Chag, there is some disagreement about the definition of the word Chag over here. We'll go with the assumption that Chag means Sukkot. And so therefore, what he says is, you may not get any benefit from me from now until Pesach if you go to your father's house between now and Sukkot. So what he did with the trigger has a much longer duration than the Isur Hana'ah. So now, halcha lifnei Pesach, if she went before Pesach, asura b'hanato ad Pesach, then she triggered the neder, and she may not get benefit from her husband until Pesach, because the neder was triggered. Halcha lifnei Pesach, asura. Mar is midayek. Now, only if she went before Pesach is she asur to get hana. Lo halcha, lo. If she didn't go, then she's not asura b'hana, which means that she may get hana from her husband until Pesach, assuming that she hasn't gone to her father's house, even though there's a possibility that after Pesach she could go to her father's house and trigger it retroactively. That is against the position of Rav Yehuda again. Because over here, what we are saying is, we're not taking preventative measures. We're not telling you don't get hana until Pesach in case you go after Pesach, until in case you trigger the Tanai later on. No, we're saying, go ahead, get benefit. We trust you not to trigger the Tanai afterwards based on the fact that you would be in violation of your nether, of the nether, because the nether was for hana between now and Pesach. If you're getting hana, that means that basically you're precluded from going to your father's house until Sukkot, and we'll trust you to do that. So again, this is against Rabbi Yehuda's position, who says we won't let you get hana in that instance. So Amar Rabbi Abba, halcha lifnei Pesach asura veloka. When it comes to, and I'm pronouncing this based on the Ran's Shita, we'll come back and discuss that this is not clear according to everyone, but Halcha lifnei Pesach asura. She goes before Pesach, it's asur. Viloka. And she gets malkot. Meaning that if she went before Pesach and then gets hanoah from her husband, she'll get malkot. Lo halcha. If she doesn't go, isura ba'alma. If she doesn't go, then there's just an isur. That isur is this preventative measure by which we say, do not get hanoah now, because if you trigger the nether later, then you're going to be in violation of your nether. So that isura ba'alma is maybe Rabbi Yehuda's shita, and that's the way he's going to explain this. Now, you raise the question, I pronounce the word viloka, that she gets malkot. You could pronounce the word viloke, that he gets malkot. Who gets malkot over here? The Ran has a very strong position that the one who violates the nether is the one who gets the malkot. Now remember, I said before that the Ran's shita is that when you violate the nether, when you take action against the nether. So it's action that causes the problem, and the focus is on the activity that causes a profaning of the word, or profaning of the nether. And therefore, according to the Ran, you can create an isur that will obligate someone else. And that means over here, where he creates an isur hana'ah, that isur hana'ah can be violated by someone else, and that violation will be subject to malkot. So over here, where the husband is the one who takes the nether, and he's oser her getting benefit from him, the hana'ah obviously has to do it in a way which attaches to a tangible object, and so on and so forth, that he took the nether in such a manner that does work out properly. So therefore, over here, he is restricting her in getting hanoah from him. And when she violates that, then she gets malkot. So you see from the Ran that your nether has the ability to cause someone else to be blocked from an item and get malkot for violating that nether. First of all, the Ran brings proof to his position. He brings proof to his position from a Gemara in Perek Yotzei Dofen, which is in a case where a Katan is Magdish something, is able to be Magdish something, and other people come and get Anah from that Hekdesh. They misappropriate the Hekdesh, they're Chayev and Mi'ilah. So what you see from that is that someone can take a nether, create Hekdesh, and then other people can be in violation of that nether or that institution. Ran shows you that other people can be in violation of that nether. So there are a number of things that we have to clarify here. Even the Ran agrees that generally the reason that this works by a nether is because you create an iser on the chefetz. And by making the chefetz a sur, therefore if someone comes and violates that, then you are chayav for violating the iser on the chefetz. And that's true of any nether. And the darim are only chal and chafetzim. So what the Ran says is just like it works over there by hekdesh shemi'ilah, it works by nidre yisur as well, which is that when you make the chefetz asur, and then someone comes and misappropriates, quote-unquote, that object by getting hanoah from it, they're in violation of that nether that you took, and they'll be chayav malkot. And so the Ran says, the woman here is chayav malkot because he made asur ba'anah. Again, he used some sort of tangible object. He says, my body or whatever, hanoah that I create, my hands that create the hanoah, whatever object that he used to create the isur hanoah over here, then that works to the point that we will hold her accountable if she violates it. The Ran already recognizes, Aval Rambam Zal Katav, Vokehu. He gets Malkot. Not her. He gets Malkot. Sheidira, because he's the one who took the nether. Imhehene Uta. That's obviously only in a case where he gives her the Hana. I mean, if he presents her with the Hana, he gives her the Hana, then he violated her, his word. Aval he ain't a loka. She doesn't get Malkot. Came into Lo Nedra Klal. She didn't take the nether. Lo Shaykh Ba Lo Yechel Devaro. There's no cut. There's no le'achel devaro if you didn't take the nether. Veleta, and he disagrees. The vadai who ain't a loke. For sure, he doesn't get malkot. And he gives examples from later on, Daf Lamed A, where it's clear that the person taking the nether is not the one subject to the malkot. It is the party that did or violated the nether that gets the malkot. So what you have here is a very, very fundamental machloket over here between the Ran and the Rambam as to who's responsible in the violation. And again, it might go back to this concept of when do you violate the nether? What is the violation of the nether? It's clear that the Ran thinks that the activity or the action is what violates the nether. And therefore, for the Ran, the only one who can violate the nether is the woman, because she's the one who actually got the anah and violated the nether. She's the one who takes the activity to violate the nether. On the other hand, for the Rambam, you might see this in the Rambam Shita and other places, the violation might not be because of the action, but rather the profaning of your word. Baal Yechel is do not profane your word. And that's what the Rambam is very focused on. It says, Ba'yachel divaro. His word cannot be violated. It means the one who took the word, the one who took the neder, is the one responsible, is the responsible party. And therefore, he is the one who can get malkot. Now, if she violates it, then he can't be held accountable for her violation. Now, if he aids and abets her in that violation, then we will hold him accountable for it, and then it'll be bayachel devaro. So the case where you'll get malkot is where you aid and abet the other party in violating your neder. That's when you get malkot. But otherwise, if the other party violates it, you won't get malkot because you didn't violate the neder, meaning that you kept your word. The other party won't get the malkot because they didn't take the neder. So they might both be asurim. Doesn't mean that they're mutarim, but there's no, for sure, no malkot over here. What does the Rambam do with the proof that the Ran brought down? So there, here again, Rav Soloveitchik points out that you could make a distinction between Nidrei Hekdesh and Nidrei Yisur. By Nidrei Hekdesh, you are actually changing the chefetz from being something that belongs to Chulin to something that belongs to Hekdesh. And it's Asur l'kol olam kulo. It's Asur to the entire world. Since it's Asur to the entire world, then everybody is bound by your statement because you've actually changed, in a sense, the ownership of the object from your ownership to Hekdesh's ownership. And now anybody who misappropriates it, misappropriated something that belongs to Hekdesh, and they can be held accountable for it. Whereas by Nidrei Yisur, you're not making it Asur to the olam. You're not saying that nobody can get hana from you. You're just saying that this woman in particular cannot get hana from you. In that case, it may not be that the quote-unquote ownership of the object or the status of the object changed enough where you can obligate someone else in this neder. And therefore, there's a distinction between Nidrei Hekdesh and Nidrei Yisur. The Rambam will agree with the Ran in that case. By Nidrei Hekdesh, other people will be held accountable. By Nidrei Yisur, you can't say that because then there's nobody, I'm being osur one person. You're changing the chefetz from this one person, their relationship with this chefetz. You don't have a right to do that, or you don't have a right at least to obligate someone to do that. And based on that distinction, we can reject the proof of the Ran and still say that the Rambam stays in his position, because what the Ran brought down as a proof is Nidrei Hekdesh. That even the Rambam will agree with. Nidrei Yisur, that's a different animal. You can't compare the two in that sense, and they are very different concepts. And because of that, by Nidrei Yisur, only the one who took the neder can be held accountable. Whereas by Nidrei Hekdesh, you can make everyone accountable because of the nature of Nidrei Hekdesh. And there, obviously, the way that you read that will depend on how you pronounce the word loka or loke over here. If it's loka, it's she who's getting the malkot. If you pronounce it loke, it's he who's getting the malkot. So that would make a difference, whether you hold like the Rambam, the Ran, how you pronounce the word. I pronounce it loka, like the Ran over here, and like majority of Rishonim, who believe that the woman here, who is the violator, is the one who's held accountable for the malkot. Right now the Gemara says, well, that's a nice solution for the ratio of that Mishnah, but ema seifa. Achara Pesach, b'bal yachel debaro. If it's after Pesach, then he violates b'bal yachel debaro. So if she goes to her father's house after Pesach, then she is in violation of Bayechel Devaro. Well, if you follow Rabbi Yehuda's prescription over here, which is, you don't get any Anah from now until Pesach, in case you go to your father's house after Pesach, well, guess what? There's no Bayechel Devaro. V'idolo itani l'knei Pesach, if you never got Anah before Pesach, like Rabbi Yehuda would suggest, Mika Bayechel. How can you have Bayechel when she goes after Pesach? Elabshita ditane. Must be a case where they got Anah. Alma mitane. So there you see that you're allowed to get hana. B'tiyuv to the Rabbi Yehuda. Again, it's another refutation of Rabbi Yehuda's position. The Gemara will answer the same way it did in our Mishnah, which is, Kiktani di'itane. That's a case where he did get hana. Meaning that Rabbi Yehuda's prescription is, don't get hana from now until Pesach. If you do get hana, harizeh b'bal yechel devaro. Then if you go after Pesach, you will be in violation of b'bal yechel devaro. But the proper behavior, the way that you should behave, is don't get hana until Pesach. And therefore, it won't be a question on Rabbi Yehuda. It's none of another Mishnah. Sha'at ne'enet li arachad. Don't get hana from me from now until Sukkot. Im telchi lebeit avich ad Pesach. If you go to your father's house from now until Pesach. Halcha lifnei Pesach. If she went before Pesach, asura, because she triggered the neder. Asura ba'anato arachad. Then she's restricting getting hana from him until Sukkot. Umuteret. Leleich achara Pesach. And she is muteret to go after Pesach. Over here, it's very strange. Why shouldn't she be allowed to go after Pesach? The trigger for the nether ended at Pesach. So if she triggered it before Pesach, she's not allowed to get hana. If she goes after Pesach, there's no problem with her going after Pesach. It has no relationship or meaning in the nether, in the context here. So what the Ran says, the Rishonim explain over here, is that the chiddush is that we don't worry that if she goes after Pesach, that she'll also come to get Hana'ah from her husband. Because the fact that the neder connects her going to her father's house with getting Hana'ah, so you would think that now she triggered the neder. She went before Pesach, she triggered the neder. She's Asura and Hana'ah from her, to her husband all the way till Sukkot. So you would think now, don't let her go to her father's house again now, because that will imply, in a sense, that we don't worry about you going to your father's house. And she said, oh, you know, I don't worry about going to my father's house. Maybe I also don't have to worry about the Hana'ah from my husband. So that's what it's a, you would have thought maybe there's a preventative measure. Don't go to your father's house because you might think you can get Hana'ah from your husband. We don't have such an institution. We don't have such a gezerah. And therefore she can go to her father's house after Pesach without any questions. Now the Gemara again says, halchas suran, that only if she did go before Pesach does she trigger the neder. Lo halcha, lo. If she doesn't go, no. So again here, it seems to indicate that you're allowed to get Hana'ah. Until that point in time, until Pesach, you're allowed to get Hana'ah, even though we don't know if she's going to go or not go. So why? According to Rabbi Yehuda, you should take the preventative measure of not getting Hana'ah during that period, because maybe she'll trigger it by going to her father's house. So Amarova, what din dafilo lo halcha asura? Now the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and that even though she didn't go, she's still asura. Halcha asura veloka. The same thing again. If she goes, then she's asura, and she violates the nether, then she's going to get malkot. Because when she went, she triggered the nether, and when she triggered the nether, then I now have an isra anah. If she violates that isra anah, now she gets malkot. Lo halcha, if she doesn't go, asura ba'alma. Then she's asura as a preventative measure. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position, and that's what the Mishnah means. If she goes, then she's under the demand or obligation of Ba'yachel Devaro, and therefore if she violates the nether, she's going to get malkot. But if she doesn't go, doesn't mean it's heter legamrei. If she doesn't go, she's under an isur derabanan, a preventative measure. That's Rabbi Yehuda's isur, not to get an injury. Now, maybe she will go in the future to her father's house. And therefore we say, don't go. So that's what it means, asura. And we can still establish Rabbi Yehuda in that Mishnah. Meitave. It's another question. Kikar zu alai hayom, imelech l'makom ploni machar. This kikar is asur to me today. If I go to such and such a place tomorrow, achau, harizeh b'bal yelich. If he eats it, then he may not go tomorrow. Because if he eats it, then when he goes tomorrow, he will trigger the neder. And by triggering the neder, he's going to retroactively, right, be a violation of bal yechel. So again, this is a question of Rabbi Yehuda, which seems to indicate that he could eat the bread on the first day, and then he's not supposed to trigger the neder on the second day. But if he does trigger it, he's in violation. So Gemara says, what type of question is this? Miktani ochel, achal tani. It doesn't say lechatchila you should eat the bread. It just said achal, if he did eat the bread. If he did eat the bread, don't trigger the neder on the next day. But it doesn't tell you to actively eat the bread. Tchi achal, arizeh b'val yelich. If you do eat it, then you may not go. But you should not eat it. And that would be like the position of Rabbi Yehuda, that you shouldn't eat it. Halach, arizeh b'val yachel devaro. If he does go, then he is in violation of Ba'yachel Devaro. Mehaleich, lo. It doesn't say that you can go. Clearly, the Tosefta over here says that if you eat the bread on the first day, then you shouldn't go on the second day. So we said, okay, that does not upend Rabbi Yehuda's position, because all the Braita said is, if you did eat, don't go the next day. And even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, if you did eat, you shouldn't go the next day. The Braita doesn't say, go ahead and eat the bread. And therefore, it's not against Rabbi Yehuda's position. But the Braita has a second half to it, which is, if you go, then you're in violation of Ba'yachel Devaro. What the Gemara thinks at this point is that the Reisha and Sefer are disconnected. So the first statement of the Braita is, if you ate on the first day, you can't go on the second day. Then the next piece is, if you go on the second day, halach, if you went on the second day, then you're in violation of Ba'yachel Devaro. And what this would seem to indicate is that going on the second day causes Ba'o or triggers Ba'yachel Devaro because you ate on the first day, implying that it is mutar to eat on the first day, and that's why you'll be in violation. So that's why if you're halach on the second day, you're in violation the first day. If it's according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says don't eat on the first day. So if he says don't eat on the first day, then when on the second day, the Braita should say mahalech, go ahead and walk. Trigger the nether. Because you know what? There's no isur. There's no isur because according to Rabbi Yehuda, you couldn't eat it on the first day. So you didn't eat on the first day, you can of course trigger it on the second day because you're not going to be in violation. So that's what the Gemara says is medayek over here. Alach, harizeh b'vayachel, dvaro, mehaleich, lo. But you may not actively walk because that will cause b'vayachel. Kasha Rabbi Yehuda. That's a problem for Rabbi Yehuda's position. Who was in the lit name Alech? It could have written Alech. I didn't tani Reisha Achal. Since the Reisha said Achal, which is Bidi Avad, because clearly you're not L'chatchil allowed to eat, you're going to do that Bidi Avad. T'lo mit nilei Ochel, because you can't write Ochel, go ahead and actively eat it. Tani Seif Alach. Therefore, in the Sefer writes it Alach. And seemingly, in the conclusion of the Gemara here, it's actually one statement. The whole Braita is a continuation of one case, and therefore we have parallel language. The language that's used in the Reisha is the language of Bidiabad, because there literally can only be Bidiabad. Don't eat it, L'chatchila, only Bidiabad. If you did eat it, then you can't walk the next day. And therefore the next part of the Braita, when it says Halach, once you have eaten it, then don't go, because then you will be in violation of Baal Yachel. But not to tell you that Halach, yes, Mehalech, no, because the only reason that it says Halach over here is because the Reisha of the Braita said Achal. So it uses a parallel word, halach. But ain't okanami. If you was to be an independent statement, you would write mehalech. And you would have done that only because of the need for parallel structure. Do we write the word halach over here? But not to teach you that it's only halach. If he went, he's in violation. But mehalech, even if you were a mehalech, even if you went intentionally, it's not a problem because of Rabbi Huda's prescription that you do not eat on the first day. And then mehalech would be just fine. And it's not against that position of Rabbi Huda. Then the Ran says something incredible. It says that the way that you have to explain this, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that you could use the word malech. Because you can't write ochel. And therefore it uses the word klomar. If you wanted to make this an independent statement, you would have written malech. But since it's connected to the previous statement, and the previous statement can only write achal and not ochel, therefore the latter statement writes halach and not Mihalech. Diavatani hachi. Because if you wrote the two statements with different tenses of the verb, which is that you would write achal in the first half, and mihalech in the second half, then mashma. Da'afagav da'achal b'yom mishon, mihalech b'yom sheni. That even if though you ate it on the first day, you're allowed to walk on the second day. V'leka ba'yachel. Who would ever explain the bright to that way? That seems ludicrous. How could you explain the bright to that when you ate on the first day that you're allowed to walk, and the second day. And then he writes, V'havi mafashinan la dekule breita hachi. Who would explain the breita this way? The zimnin achal, harihu babal yelech. Sometimes when you eat the bread on the first day, you're not allowed to walk on the second day. Klomar, kish achal b'mezid. When he ate it intentionally. Dainu, shazachar shi isur alicha talui b'achalilto. When he remembers that there's a connection between the going and his achila. V'zimnin. There's sometimes when you eat on the first day, mehalech b'sheni. You're allowed to walk on the second day without any problem. If you ate the bread on the first day unintentionally, without remembering your neder at all, klomar shaloya zachur b'shasha achal sheisra alicha talui b'achilato. He does not remember at the time that he eats it that his isra alicha has any connection to his eating. P'chiyai gavna mehalech b'yom sheni. In that case, he can walk on the second day without any problem. Wow. So what the Ran says is that even though you took a neder, in order to be in violation of that neder, you have to understand that when you eat this bread, that this bread is a violation of the neder if you walk tomorrow. You must have an awareness of the neder at that time in order to be in violation of the neder later on, retroactively. But if at the time that you eat, you have no recollection of the neder, then you can walk the next day and trigger the neder and you won't be in violation. Because when you ate it the first day, you didn't eat it with the connection to the neder with that in mind. That's an amazing concept in the Ran here that he says this. Because the fact that shaloya zochur b'shasha achal sheisra alicha talui b'achilato, because you don't remember at the time that you eat that it's connected to achila, hichagavna, you can walk on the second day without any problem, and there is no violation of this at all. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to see on Daf Chavei that what we call nidrei shagagot, that when you have a neder that's taken b'shogeg, that is not a violation of the neder. What the Ran says again is that the neder, when you took it, you had full kavana, you intentionally took the neder. But when you ate it, you were shogeg. This goes back to the Ran, the Shitato again, that the problem in always is focused not on when you took the neder, but in the time that you violate the neder. So over here, the violation of the neder will only happen retroactively, but the violation of the neder has to be an intentional violation of the neder, otherwise it's not a violation of the neder. And therefore, if you eat the mezid, then you're in violation of the neder retroactively if you walk the next day. But if you eat b'shogeg today, Even when you can walk tomorrow, we don't even stop you from walking today because you can't violate your neder bishogeg. The Iran says that the when is the neder violated? When you do at the time of the action, it's on the moment of the action. So therefore, now you're not in violation by yechel because you did a bishogeg, and therefore you can trigger it tomorrow, and it will not cause a violation of your neder because your eating today was only done bishogeg, not connected back to the neder. You won't be chayav at all for by yechel because it's done bishogeg. It's not a violation of the neder. The Ran here is not even asur me'aleich. You can walk the next day and trigger it because it will not be a violation of by yechel. Again, this is the Ran, the Shitato, who's very much focused on the maaseh being the thing that triggers the nether. Now, if you are much more focused on the Baal Yechel, meaning on the keeping your word, is what we're focused on here, then even possibly Bishogeh, you could argue that you've not kept your word. And therefore, the Baal Yechel is triggered even when you eat Bishogeh, because the focus is on keeping your word, not on the action itself. And that will lead to the difference in opinion. Again, it might be the same thing with the Rambam sheet that we saw before, about the person who takes the nether getting the Malkot, because it's about keeping your word. It's not about the violation, it's not about the action, it's about the one who took the neder must upkeep his word, must uphold his word, must keep his word. Never the focus is on the person who took the neder rather than the violator of the neder. But this again, the Ran Shitato was very focused on the violation of the neder rather than the keeping of the word of the neder. And so the Ran points out over here, even though we've asked numerous questions with Tiyufta and Rav Yehuda, the Locha is like Rav Yehuda over here. Because we see that the Gemara is going out of its way to be Shakla Matarya, to go back and forth and trying to explain the position of Yehuda and make him fit in all the Mishnayot. That's indicative of the fact that the Gemara thinks that the Halacha here is like Rav Yehuda and not like Rav Nachman. Alright, now, the next part of the Gemara. Ha'omer li'isha, kunam sha'ani mishamshech. He says, I take a neder, I will not have relations with you. Harizeh b'bal yechel debaro. Gemara says, va mishtabed la mido raito. What's going on over here? Isn't he obligated to her mido raito? So why is the neder chal at all over here? Why should it take effect at all? Dichtiv. It says, shirak sutava onata. So we learned this in the Gemara in Ketubah, that shirak sutava onata lo yigura. So what is onata? Onata is her conjugal rights. So over here, she has an ability to demand from him tashmisha mita. How can he restrict himself in that? Now, whether this shibud here really means shibud the mitzvah, or shibud means a right that is granted to the individuals from the point of nisuin, which would make somewhat more sense because we know that nidarim are able to override mitzvot, and therefore just because it's a shibud, because a mitzvah would not be enough of a preventative measure to stop the neder from taking effect. And that the shibud here is really a shibud on the goof, on the body of the individual, a right that exists there, that you have a right to demand that they perform the tashmish in these cases, not just because of the mitzvah, but because of your rights to demand that the individual perform such an act. So Bomer, the Gemara says, Hanat tashmishech alai. In terms of the nether, not in terms of restricting the tashmish, but rather in restricting the hana of the tashmish. Va'alo kanecha lebitashmish. And of course, a byproduct of his having tashmish with her is that he gets benefit from it. What is oser over here is the hanat tashmish, not the tashmish itself. So now, there are a number of points to this. The Gemara is going to prove to us that there is such a distinction in a second, so we'll come back to do that in a second. But what to focus on over here is, number one, we had a Gemara in Ketubot that says that a neder of konamot is strong enough lafkia midei shibud. Like hektish. If you're makdish something, you can take away a shibud, a lien on that object. You can remove the lien from the object. So you have the same thing over here. Why can't you take a neder over here and have that neder unwind the shibud? The Gemara said before, oh, it's clear that he can't take the neder over here because she has a shibud on him. But we know that nidre hektish and nidarim upend a shibud. So say the same thing over here, that the neder will upend the shibud and there's no problem with shibud anymore because he took a neder. So the Ran says that what you have to say here is that the Rabbanan strengthened her shibud to the point where the neder cannot do it. And we find other examples of that. In the Gemara in Ketubot, we talked about the Masa Yadayim, that even though if she's Makdish, her Masa Yadayim, technically it should unwind the shibud that the husband has on her. Nevertheless, the Chamim gave superpowers to that shibud so that Hektesh can't come and unwind it. So the same thing over here. Chachamim gave superpowers to her shibud on his tashmish that he doesn't have the ability to unwind it. That's number one. Number two over here, he says, is Hanat Tashmisheich Alai. He restricts himself from getting benefit from having relations with her. And that's what causes the problem, because he didn't focus directly on the Tashmish. He focused on the Hana that derives from it. So what he says is that he didn't say, I will not have relations with you. He simply said, I will not get benefit from relations with you. So that's where he takes effect. Now what's interesting over here is, Hanat Tashmisheich Alai is a nether about an intangible object. And we already concluded that our Mishnah is talking about a case where it's only Asur Midrabanan. It's Bal Yachel Midrabanan. That means that this nether takes effect only Midrabanan and not Midoraita. Yet, it's able now to undermine a din d'oraita of shibud of onah. The Ran says, how is it possible? Why do you have a nether midrabanan being oker a davar min haTorah? So the Ran says, it's a famous line, bin tamar hay nidra d'rabanan hu danat tashmish leit bei mashmasha. So he says, kemi midrabanan ba'alma hu heki chayel nidra delay. Deleta ele midrabanan ba'alma lafkuye mitzvot onah. How does it come rid of a mitzvot onah? His requirement of mitzvot onah or mitzvot piri rivya. The nether takes effect. The result of that is that now he can't have tashmish. That's a byproduct of that. But that happens in a passive manner. Bahanach mitzvot chachamim, we know, are matnin lakor davar min haTorah b'shevi al taseh. Chachamim can be oker davar min haTorah in a passive form. Shevi al taseh, the chachamim have the right to be oker d'var min haTorah. This is raised by most Rishonim with regards to shofar. How can the Chachamim restrict blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah? The Torah says, blow the shofar. We say, Sheva al taseh. You're just doing it by passively abstaining from blowing the shofar. That's mutar. So the Ran says, that's the same thing over here. The same thing over here is that the nether takes effect. Because he said, Anat tashmisheich alai, the Rabbanan says such a nether takes effect. A byproduct of that nether is, he can no longer have tashmish. But that's v'shev al taseh now. That's acting passively, he violates the requirement of onah. That the chachamim have a right to do. They have a right to block a mitzvah d'oraita v'shev al taseh through a passive action. They say to him, abide by this nether. By abiding by this nether, it causes a shev al taseh where he doesn't mekayim priribya, he's not mekayim onah. That's fine because that's a shev al taseh and the chachamim have a right to institute something that in a passive manner uproot something midoraita. So that's how the Ran deals with this problem over here. Of anat tashmisheich alai, and that's how he's oker davar min haTorah. This will be subject to the Gemara in Ketubot, the Mishnah in Ketubot, machlokes Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Once he does do this, how long can they stay married before we say the marriage is terminated? Because either you get a haTorat Chacham or the marriage is over, whether it's a week or 2 weeks, that we learned in the Gemara in Ketubot. Now the Ran's assumption here is that the Bal Yachel is only midrabanan. But you could argue, and the Rashba and the Ritva seem to argue in this direction, that we're talking about a case here where the neder is effective midoraita. And that it's not just effective midrabanan. Even though the lishanot that are mentioned in the Gemara would only be effective midrabanan, the assumption here is that he took a neder that somehow would take effect midoraita. And that's how you're mafkia the mitzvah midoraita, because now you have a neder midoraita. And we know that nedarim are able to undermine or prevent the performance of a mitzvah, because then it would be doraita versus doraita, as opposed to the Ran's assumption that, based on the Lishanot of Neder that are mentioned in the Gemara, that would only be here an Isur Dirabanan. Then, the Ran asks a second question, which is, if we have a mitzvah over here, Bona, or you have a mitzvah of Piri Rivi over here, then the Hana that the individual is getting over here is through a mitzvah. And we have a principle, mitzvot, lav lehenot innu. Mitzvot are not for Hana. So why is there a problem here at all? Let him do the mitzvah. And if he gets enough from it, mitzvot lav le'anot nitnu. So the Ran makes a statement here, which is controversial. It really is connected to a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, on Daf Kofchet in Rosh Hashanah, about going to a mikveh. That if a person is asur ba'ana from using the water of the mikveh, can he go into the mikveh? So the Gemara there says that he can go in the wintertime, where he doesn't get any cooling down or benefit from it. But in the summertime, he can't go into the water, because then he gets, not only does he go to the mikveh, but he gets the ana of cooling off and going into the water and washing down, which is not allowed. So the Ran says over here, Yishamar, Dechi amrina mitzvot la leino ninu hanimileit, lomar she'in kiyuma mitzvot chashuv ana'a. That only means that when you do a mitzvah, we don't consider that to be ana'a. So when you accomplish a mitzvah, that's not called ana'a. You blow the shofar. So that's, even though blowing of the shofar, you accomplish the mitzvah, that hana'ah of accomplishing the mitzvah is not called hana'ah. But aval mikol makom imitane gufei. If you get physical pleasure, b'hadei mikay mitzvah hana'ah mikrei, that's still called hana'ah. It was not under the rubric of mitzvah lav le'enot nidu. There is a Rashba that disagrees with this Ron over here, and there are other Rishonim that disagree. We'll get into more detail in tomorrow because we'll deal with this idea of hana'ah tomorrow, so we'll discuss it in more detail. But what you have over here is a machloket Rishonim as to what it means, mitzvah lav le'enot nidu. Is mitzvah lav le'enot nidu mean that, like the Ron says over here, if you do a mitzvah, the hana'ah of doing the mitzvah is not called hana'ah? Or does mitzvah lav le'enot nidu mean that if you get hana'ah as a byproduct of doing the mitzvah, then we will allow you to do the mitzvah? So then, how do you deal with the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that says you're not allowed to go to the mikveh in the summer? The problem there is that once he goes into the mikveh, then he's done with becoming tahor. If he stays any longer in the mikveh, if he, while he's coming out, he tarries a little bit, that's where the hana'ah comes in. You can get hana'ah by simply tarrying over there, and that hana'ah is separate from the mitzvah, and that's what we worry about over there, and that's how the Rashba will explain that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Over here, the hana'ah and the tashmish are inextricably connected. You can't separate the two of them. The hana'ah and the tashmish are simultaneous. And therefore, if you can't separate them, then you have to deal with the Rashba, which is the Rashba says that mitzvah lav le'enot nidu, and therefore why over here it should be permitted. So that's what he's going to suggest over here. That over here it would be permitted, yet our Gemara says it's not permissible. So we have to explain the Rashba in the context of this Gemara over here, and we'll do that in tomorrow's daf. Now the Gemara continues and says, Dam Rav Kahana. So here we have a proof that there's a difference between restricting the tashmish and restricting the hana'ah. If she says, tashmishai alecha, she says that my tashmish is asur to you, the woman says to the husband, kofina tal misham shato, dishibude mishabakle. We force her to have tashmish with him because he has a shibud, he has a right to have tashmish with her, and she cannot restrict it. And therefore we force her to have tashmish even though she's taken the nether. Because she tried to oser something that she doesn't have a right to be oser. Again, because we strengthen the shibud of the husband here to the point where she can't override it. Hanat tashmishcha alai. If she says, I will not get any benefit from your tashmish, then asur. Then we don't let them have tashmish. Shein machilin lo adam devar asur lo. We don't allow the husband now to have tashmish with her because she said, I'm not allowed to get benefit from my husband, basically in the manner of tashmish. That means that if he goes and has tashmish to her, he's now, we're forcing her to engage in something that's asur to her. And that we won't do, because probably you're in violation of lifnei iver lo titen michshol, that you're not allowed to force someone to violate a restriction that they've placed upon themselves. So what you see from here, that's what the Gemara is pointing out, there's a difference between when you restrict the cohabitation itself, which you can't do, because each party has a right over here, the husband has a right in the wife, and the wife has a right in the husband. So if you go after the cohabitation itself, it won't work, the nether does not take effect. On the other hand, if you restrict the benefit that will come from having tashmish with you, that you can do, because you didn't focus directly on the tashmish, you focused on a, we'll call a sidebar, or a benefit that also happens to come, and over there we won't feed you or won't force you to engage in isur, or violate the isur hana'ah. And therefore, it will take effect, the nether, in that case. And that's what the Gemara points out, there is such a distinction. We'll stop over here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Tet Vav Amud Bet.